Now I have the great honor of introducing our next presenter to the stage, and I'm going to have a little bit of fun with today's introduction. I've known Don for about 12 years now, maybe even a little bit more, and Don and I have traveled across the country many, many different times, and I've got to know Don very, very well. And I've written down a few little-known facts about Don that you may find interesting. So, first of all, let's say, I just want to read them because I had to make notes of this. He likes pina coladas and getting caught in the rain. Oh, sorry, that's the wrong list. Sorry. Wrong list there. Sorry, Don. He has authored 7 books in 8 years.
Woo-hoo.
And an 8th one is coming out. If he gets it out before the end of this year, that'll be 8 books in 8 years, and he's never made a dollar off of any of his books. Every dollar he has ever made in royalties has been donated 100% to Habitat for Humanity. Nice. He's been married 25 years to the same wonderful woman, which in and of itself is a fantastic accomplishment. He's an organic farmer, chicken, cows, vegetables, and if you want to talk tractors, you better come with your Kubota information. No John Deere's allowed on the Campbell farm. He had an audition for Dragon's Den as one of the dragons, not as someone pitching something, one of the people being pitched to an audition to be one of the dragons. He is very well conversed, very well read. He has a giant, I don't know how to say this, a giant head of knowledge, and the only thing bigger than the head that he has of knowledge is his heart. He is a caring and giving person. His favorite band is the Beatles. His favorite music instrument is the drums, and Don has just started as living his personal beliefs, has set up his drum kit, his own personal drum kit, at home now. So to give a very special introduction to Don, clear spot on your table, ladies and gentlemen. Hands flat on the table. Hands flat on the table. We're going to give a drum roll welcome. Come on, drum roll. Ladies and gentlemen, number 13 in your program, but number 1 in your heart, please welcome to the stage, Mr. Don R. Campbell.
Woo!
Give a round of applause.
Thank you. Russell Westcott. A few things. Number 1, we promised never to do that again. Remember that 5 years ago?
Well, yeah, that, yeah. Especially that pina colada.
The pina colada and the rain thing. That was the date thing. Ron needs to see you, Russ. Anyway, welcome back, everybody. Welcome back. Richard Dolan, if you're still in the room, thank you. Thank you. You touched a few people's hearts throughout this morning to set us up. And you set me up to be, okay, and here's Don, let's do math. How do you follow that? Hey. Okay. Well, you know what? There's something about this whole thing called real estate, but I really want to ask a question that's close to my heart is, who did their homework last night? Raise your hand, please. Holy crap. Who? Okay, keep your hand up. Put your hand down if you're lying. That is amazing. That is tremendous. And did it make you feel a little bit uncomfortable? Yes or no? So yeah, yeses and noes, obviously. That's what I was expecting to get, a little louder, but expecting to get that. But really, as we go through this process of this personal beliefs, last night I reviewed mine, and it was kind of interesting to just kind of sit there and review it and go, wow, I'm going to have to change this. I'm going to update it because things are happening. It's a lot of this belief stuff is really starting to come true. I remember the first one I wrote in 1992, I lost. You know what? Next rain meeting I'm at, I'll bring it. It's 1992 June, and it was in a workshop very similar to this, and they said, okay, you're gonna make your world purpose vision thing. I go on, yeah, whatever. Anyway, you know what time is it? What time are we going for lunch? You know, those types of things that we all do when we're at these things sometimes. And I rewrote it. I did all the homework. I said, oh, that is really cool. I wonder where that came from out of my brain. And then I put it in the binder, such as this. And then I put it on the shelf. And then I packed it in a box. And then I put it away, like all this stuff and all these notes that we're taking this weekend. And you know what happened? We moved. And I was moving all this stuff. And I go, oh, this is crap. There's like tons of it. I've been to so many things. I got all this stuff. That should have been the message, right? I got all this stuff and things weren't happening as fast as I wanted them to. And I open up the binder and I'm going, throwing stuff out, right? Recycle. Oh, what's this? Oh, life purpose. And you got to remember, in 92, things were just, actually Margaret and I, right? We were at that same thing, weren't we? And that is so true. Just remember that. And I read it and I literally, I'm not overstating it. I had to sit down after I read it. I thought, holy mackerel, from Mr. Guy in aviation and overalls to where I was when I opened this in 2001. 2001, that's what exactly when it was, 2001. And I opened it up and going, oh my God, I'm actually doing all of those things in there, none of which I was doing in 1992. And I had just, it was just the clarity of getting it down started to program the coconut, right? And once the coconut gets programmed and you don't let anybody just distract you from where you want to go, it really starts to happen. And it was truly shocking. So I go upstairs and I go, hey, Connie, you know, look at this. And she went, okay, that's just like really weird. But it's true. You know, intention is so important. And my intention today is quite clear. Is we've walked up the ladder, right? We're up to number 5. We've gone through a bunch of the steps, and now we're going to analyze problems. Oh, hi, Mario. We've gone through a bunch of the steps. Please take out 2 things. You'll need any of the properties that you're looking at the moment. Have those ready. And calculator. And if you don't have a calculator, I just happened to know when I was walking upstairs that Selena Chung actually is giving calculators away up at her booth. So run now. She only has a couple of dozen if you don't have one. You will need to do some math because that's how this whole real estate game works. We're going to go to our pink section of our book, the 3rd section. I swear Sonia chose the pink section for me as a joke. So think about this. We have now boiled it down, boiled it right down to where we want to buy. You know, we started with the economic fundamentals, how long ago that was. And then we started to get down to this scorecard to help you get it easier. And then we became geographic specialists. And then we started to put the word out to the world that this is what we need to do. We're buying property in what town did we use yesterday? Red Deer, right? Yeah, somebody yelled Red Deer, yeah. So Red Deer, so we want properties in Red Deer, and you're getting the word out, and you're using all these unique ways of attracting it. And then we started to filter these properties out. We're at the cash flow zone. Did anybody test this ladder, by the way, this morning? I was too busy to test this. So anyway, we'll find out, shall we? So the cash flow zone. So now what we've done is we've eliminated the majority of properties. Now, because we're all busy, we all have other pieces of our lives to play in. I don't like to say work in, but play in. Then what we have to do is we've narrowed it down to like 2 or 3 properties to look at that moment. And now we get to do the math. And so number 6 is the property cash flow analysis. It's the actual stuff that engineers and accountants have been waiting for. How can a formula such as the cash flow zone do anything other than confuse? I got that question yesterday. And I say, it doesn't confuse, it saves you time and energy and a lot of money and a lot of money. So as we go to the pink section, you're going to see a picture of a sample property. There was a pink property. It's a John Cougar Mellencamp property, if anybody gets that joke. You've identified the target forest, right? Let's give us a new town to use today. What do we want?
Halifax.
Yeah, let's use Halifax. Yeah, that'd be good. Halifax. So we're going to be buying in Halifax today because it's on the other coast and nobody has any energy around it. So Halifax, okay, great. We've narrowed it down that Nova Scotia's got the big shipbuilding project, so there's going to be billions and billions of people, billions and billions of dollars pouring in there to create many long-term 20-year jobs. So we've narrowed it down to that. We've narrowed it down to the tree, which is not just Nova Scotia, but we're going to go right to Halifax and the surrounding areas where those jobs are going to ripple out over the next 15 years and put upward pressure on the real estate market and the rents. By the way, Halifax, that's where the NDP government came out and said, no, we're not going to put rent controls on. And then we carefully choosing the harvest by going to level number 6, which is making sure that it works. And by the end of the day, when Patrick's standing on the top here on the red bit, then you'll be having a basket full of well-performing properties. So in section 3, page 1 is the pink. That's not pink, but the house is pink. It's a townhouse example for you to look at, to use, because that's roughly the type of information you get from the average realtor and average MLS. And you have to interpret it. You have to learn what words mean and whether it even has a remote chance to perform in your portfolio. But something like that is not pretty. The picture there is on purpose because Russell and Don, and I believe Patrick too, own a lot of properties that look like that. Remember the word boring? Well, this is the epitome of boring. And we don't care. We really don't care because it's just a store which we're going to rent out air to people. That's all we're doing. We're not really renting the walls or the structure. We're renting the air, the protection, the shelter to our potential tenants. So how it looks is not as important, except from the marketing point of view, but not as important as the numbers. And the numbers make all the difference in the world. We talked a lot about vendor motivation yesterday, and I'm going to talk a little bit today about vendor motivation. And here's what happens. If you haven't been to Acre before on a Sunday, because it's now day 2, things start to just kind of spew out. Ideas and thoughts and strategies that are occurring that are around the structure. So I would, you know, the pink tab, I would keep that as your note spot for the things that are just going to spew out. For instance, vendor motivation. We heard it from a couple of different people talking about the importance of vendor motivation yesterday, and we even on the panel. So here, the owner's moving to new home being built in July. Is he motivated or not motivated?
Motivated.
How do you know? What month is it? It's June, or it's August. Depends on when. But say, for instance, it's now. It's November, and the house is being built in July. Is he motivated, yes or no?
No.
Averagely, right? Some people are a little bit conservative and say, oh, God, I just really seriously need this to be done. But majority-wise, when you've got 7-8 months, including a Christmas period, they're not really frothing at the mouth. If it was May, you know for a fact that the deal is going to be easier to cut because everyone's barking at them to get this property signed off. So, anybody here built a house before? Keep your hand up if it finished on time. Well, you were building yourself. That's not fair. Yeah, so here's what happens. Quite clearly, here's what happens, is that the builders don't finish on time. And therefore, people who have sold their house with the deadline of them finishing on time are moving in with the in-laws in the basement. Imagine that. Imagine the pain of moving twice and getting a storage, etc. So here's the thing. Before I get into the analysis, I'm just going to give you this. Why not tell them, and it's called, and write this down, a rolling close. A rolling close. If you know they're building a house, the chance of them finishing it and being able to move in on time and getting a certificate. By the way, do you have to have a certificate to move into your house? I was just wondering, one of the guys who had his hands up. No, you don't? Okay. You get the certificate of your ability to move in is delayed. Now what do you do? Well, you've just solved the problem because you say, hey, I'm sure you've built houses before, just assume, and sometimes things are delayed and you have to move in with other people or you have to live in a hotel, have to move twice. I'm the only one of anybody who's making an offer on your property that can solve that problem. I'm going to give you what's called a 30-day rolling close. And a 30-day rolling close, Mr. Vendor or Ms. Vendor, is You give me a 30-day notice that the house isn't going to be ready, because the builder should give you at least that much warning saying, it's not going to work. I will extend the closing date an extra month, no cost to you. And they go, why would I do that? I said, because I've just relieved all of the pressure of you having to hope that the builder finishes when you finish, when you need to move. Because I could put down July 1st or July 15th, but if that house isn't ready, you're moving twice. Now, for them, you have just solved and relieved an absolute ton of stress. For you, you don't care. You hope that that property is not even completed until next December, because you have locked that price up. You've locked the deal. You've negotiated the deal. You've stood out from all the other people who are bidding on the house. If it's a really hot market, like it's going to be in Alberta and Halifax, and you stand out. You go, listen, I got the solution. Bing, and you can get your house and let the market do whatever it wants to do, because you own it in essence. You own the right to that price at that property at that price, and it can go and go and go, so you get to ride the market without actually owning the property, and that's pretty cool. So they win, you win. So that has nothing to do with what I'm supposed to be talking at this point, but it's a secret that works over and over and over again. But five of you will use it, so step out. Page two. Page two is a goldenrod example of the property analyzer. This is the part that everybody really likes, because it's math and adding and subtracting. And we're going to think about it just a little bit differently. Remember, how we treat this is like a business. We really, truly would need to treat the real estate like a business. So we're going to do what successful businesses do, and that is create budgets and create projections, and then work to the budgets and work to the projections, so that if there's a bump all on the road, we've factored that in for the budget so you can sleep at night. Now, there's a few ways in which to do that. Obviously, at the top of the form is quite simple. Capture all of the details that you need, the address, etc., because here's another little secret, little side note, is never throw these away, even if you don't buy the property. Stick them in a file, because you're a geographic specialist in Halifax. Where you're a geographic specialist in Halifax, Halifax isn't that big of a town, and guess what's going to happen? That property will come up again 2 years from now, 3 years from now. Keep it in some sort of order where you can find it. And then go back to, and you can keep all of your notes and all your diligence on that property. You can go to it and go, oh, that's the one that they had the asbestos in the basement, or that's the one that didn't cash flow. I wonder if the rents have moved now 5 years later. You know, so it becomes a resource for you as that geographic specialist. Don't keep it if you're going to be a generalist, because you know what? If you're running all over the country looking for property, you know, your file cabinet would be giant and you'll be wasting your time anyway. But you're not going to be generalists. So in this case, the townhouse is three bedrooms. It's $1,495 current rent. But because you're a geographic specialist, you know that you'll be able to bump it up to $1,625, because that's what they rent for now. And also, you become a much better marketer. You're attracting tenants and much better marketer, so you can get above market rents when you're a better marketer. Just so you're aware, don't discount your rents. The increase date is September the 1st, because last time it was increased was September the 1st. So you have to know that so you can factor that into your budget. And when you're inspecting, you can put anything down there like it's neat and clean or needs new appliances or whatever it is as you're walking through. But the math comes out as $1,495, the total rent. Somebody asked me this, how did you get the total rent? Literally, somebody asked me this in Edmonton. How do I get this number? That times 12. Yeah, just wanted to be clear. Total rent for the annual is $17,940, right? Yes. And your projected rent is $19,500. So depending on how close you are to September is whether you use this number or this number. If it's September 15th and you can't do it until September the 1st, use this budget. If it's July, June, use this number because you're going to be able to raise the rents in your market. Because guess what? These economic fundamentals are saying people are moving in and rents are being pressurized upwards, and you're, and the values are going to be start pressurizing upwards, right? If don't use a, anything like this if the market's flat, if your market is not growing, if it's not an economically sound area. But here's the good stuff. Your expenses. Yay! Yes, there are expenses. So in this case, you have to choose who's paying the electricity. Now, note number three from this morning is please do whatever you possibly can to get the tenant's name on the utilities as much as you possibly can. Let them be responsible, because suddenly what happens is they don't heat the kitchen with the oven. How do I know? Because we changed the building, we put individual meters in it, notified everybody at rental increase on September 1st, you're going to be responsible for your electricity. And the total electricity of the building went down a whopping 18% by making them responsible. Because, you know, it's like anything. It's not really mine. It's like I would never give this workshop away for free. It'd be stupid, right? Because you come in, you kind of go, well, it's free, whatever. I have no engagement in it. Anything that's free, we kind of don't have an attachment to. But in this case, the electricity is paid by the tenant. Yay. And so the heat is electric, so the electricity is paid by the tenant. The water and sewer, I've decided that that's the business to be in, because you sell the water coming in and you sell the water going out. You get paid for both. That's a really cool system. But so in this case, it's a condo complex, and the condo fees cover water and sewer for the condo complex. So that's already paid for within your condo fees. But in a regular single family home, you have to budget that in. Or if you own a whole multifamily property, you have to budget that in. The insurance. Now, a few conversations about insurance. First off, we should all, I don't think Park's in here, are they? Are you guys up? You're probably up, sitting upstairs. I'll tell you, the amount of money and the amount of increased coverage that I've got from Park Insurance is ridiculous. And that's the reason that they're here. I don't make any money from them, from you buying from them. I will tell you right now that insurance is something that many, many investors discount, forget about, just get it at the last moment. So stop that, because here's something that many of you have insurance on your rental properties right now that at the, and it's probably on page 69 of the report, right? You have to dig down, is that after 30 days of vacancy, the property insurance is invalid. And on day 31, when that puppy burns down or floods or whatever, you are not covered. So that's number one. Number two is when you're paying your insurance, there's a little piece of insurance in the condo fees. Remember that. So the condo corporation has an insurance on the building, on the exterior of the building, etc. And you pay a little bit of that. However, the deductible, because it's a big condo corporation, can be $5,000, $7,000, $12,000, the deductible. So if it's your property that causes the problem, especially if you're on the sixth floor and water comes down three floors, I heard the other day, because the guy unfortunately died when he was pouring his bath on two floors up, and then everybody, the two guys below, were on holidays. Yeah, came back a week later, and it's like everything is just anyway. However, the guy who owns the one where the guy died has to pay the condo deductible, $5,000. So for a couple of bucks a month, you as a condo owner should have condo owner's insurance over and above this insurance thing called the condo insurance. It's cheap, and I'll tell you, you can get coverage for tenant vandalism. Has anybody ever had a tenant vandalize their property? Raise your hand. Yeah, wouldn't it be nice if somebody else paid for that on your deductible? So that's why I seriously tell you to go talk to those guys sometime today and get your stuff reviewed, because I have been caught with bad insurance. I will never, ever be caught with bad insurance ever again. So in this case, this person here is doing just going by the condo, and good luck with them. So that if it's be $20 a month-ish, I wish he was in here so I could ask the question, but it's roughly per condo. You can put it in there. But this one here is going by the condo. The other thing that happens, side note, sorry, on the insurance thing, because it's really, really important, this whole insurance thing, and is that if you have renovated your property and there's a burn down, guess what? The condo insurance will only build it right back to the level that it was initially. So if you've put nice stuff in there, done all that stuff, you're going to get crap again. So just be aware of that. And that's if you live, too. If you're living in a condo, you better check that. So property management. Raise your hand if you're going to manage your own properties. Raise your hand. Okay, hi. It's okay. Many of us do. Okay, keep it up if you're worth anything. Okay, good. Pay yourself. Understand that these properties are each in of themselves a business. The business has expenses. You are one of them. You are not the property. Okay, understand that. I manage it myself. Okay, how much do you pay yourself? Oh, no, it'll all come out in the wash and the cash flow. No, it has to stand on its own because as you build your portfolio, hopefully you will see the light to find a good property manager so that you are making $100,000 decisions instead of pulling Ernie out of a toilet, you know? It's been stuffed down there. Or Elmo or whoever it is. I guess I should use Elmo because Ernie is actually can be a guy. Elmo out of the toilet. Oh, I can't believe it. I got to go over there. Stupid tenants. And then you'll stop buying property. So in this case, about 7% is a, and what is the percentage of? 7% of what? Gross rent. Thank you. So write that down if you don't know that. 7% of rent is $104.65 or in this case, $113.75. The current management is a 3. If you can find a 3 in some cities, that's good. But that's a different story. The vacancy allowance. Now we're starting to talk about budgeting. And Ray Reuter is going to come up here and show you some actual live properties that that RAIN members have sent in very, very recently to talk about how this plays in. But vacancy allowance, I like to use roughly CMHC times 2. Whatever CMHC says, I multiply it by 2 as a budget. Will I pay this out $59 or $65 every single month? Yes or no? No, I won't. But I need to budget for the inevitable. Something is going to happen. Tenant will leave at some point. Now, I have tenants for 10 and 11 years in some of our properties. They won't even allow me to paint. They just love living as they live. And I'm okay. No judgment. If you want to do that, that's fine. Oh, rental increase. And the, I treat them very, very well. Instead of painting, I will send them a Tony Roma's gift card because right around the corner is a Tony Roma's. Make them feel welcome. They're paying you, in this case, what was it? $1,600 a month. Many of you who are self-employed, that's a pretty damn good client, don't you think? Somebody paying you $1,600 a month. This is only a client for your business. So vacancy allowance, I factor it in. The current vacancy is 2, so I'm using 4. And Ray uses a really good formula as well. Rental pool management, that's if you're in a rental pool, it's a decreasing number of those rental pools that are showing up, just so you know. They're starting to be rated as securities, and if they're not selling it to you as a security, it could get shut down and you could be really screwed over. So be very, very careful on the rental pools. Repairs and maintenance. Another thing that you need to budget for. It is not going to happen, hopefully, every single month. It's not going to happen every single month. But budget for an annual amount. So what is that? 80 times, that's $1,000, right? 81 times 12, $970 a year for potential repairs. And then I just factor it in, just like I'm doing a business budget. Boom, boom, boom. I'm not paying every $81 every month. And resident manager, in this case, we all pooled together on this townhouse complex, and everybody chucked in $15 a month to help keep the resident manager walking around and taking some phone calls and cleaning up the garbage that inevitably shows up on a unit that looks like that, that one on the pink sheet. Now, as we go through this, you add this up. If there's anything else that you think that you need to pay on a monthly basis in here, not financing, but in here, in operations, or you want to budget for it, then pop it in. Pop it in. Add it up. Ba-ba-ding, there you go. Projected at $1,085 because we're sitting about July here. Please goodness gracious, add $10, $20 a month for bookkeeping. Who's doing their own bookkeeping? Raise your hand. Keep your hand up if you love it. Yeah, okay. Now stand up if you're a bookkeeper in here who understands what's going on. Stand up. Stand up. Do you want to? You want people to hire you to bookkeep? Not anymore. Oh, this young lady in the back, Kim. You were up on stage earlier, I heard. Yes. Hey, nice purple. So Kim France, for instance, 10 to 20, is that a good budget or not? $10 to $20 per, yeah, it is. Okay. You can use your mouth. I can hear you. Yes. Okay. So because you are going to eventually learn that property management is something somebody can do and bookkeeping is something you can do. Ah, but it's so easy. It's so that, yeah, you know what? I'd rather you spend that hour looking for a good property in your target market than spending it at midnight, because that's when everybody does their bookkeeping, midnight, trying to put the stupid things in to get to the accountant at the end of the year. And also, the professionals can actually give you some hints that might save you some taxes. So what that means is that I get $1,085 positive cash flow. Isn't that correct? Out of a condo, a townhouse? Yes or no? Yes or no? No. Because we're missing one thing. What's that? Financing. A little bit important. So if you're paying cash for it, that's what you get. But still, if you're paying cash for it, do the analysis. But here's how you want to really start paying attention to how it's really going to cash flow. Now, we're doing 80% 30-year AM. Yes, you can still get 30-year amortization. It's just not CMHC. 80% mortgage, so 20% down. $175,600 is that number. We went crazy, about 5.25% interest rate, 3-year term, because at that point it was the right choice to do. Every month it changes what you want to choose. $963.53. Anybody here on a variable rate mortgage? Raise your hand. Congratulations, you are geniuses and have not bought into the fear mongering. And you're probably making a crap load of money. If you have not looked at your statement recently, you will be shocked at how much you've paid down. It's really quite spectacular. Russell Westcott still in the room? This is twice now, right? I've asked for Russ twice and he's not in the room. Damn it. He has this great number that we were going to share yesterday, and we're going to share it later on when Russell shows up. So this one here is principal and interest. Why don't I include taxes? Anybody want to guess? Because it's there, right? I've already covered taxes. Property taxes, $187 last month. Last increase is July or April the 1st. So we are only paying principal interest. So that means that the net debt service on this mortgage is $963.53. Your net rent is going. Your net revenue is going to be $1,085. That means for this condo, it's $121.47. Now, that's a pretty decent little deal. And you will not find 100 of those all the time, every day, especially in a market that's doing its thing, right? It's moving up. Now, values go, and then rents go, and then rents go, and then values go. But this is it. I would buy this all day long and put it in my portfolio. Why? Well, first off, you're 121 to the positive, but you can add back, if you go back, you can add back the 81 and the 65, right? The $81 of the repairs and maintenance and the vacancy allowance of 65. You can add that back in there. So you're really, what is that, 8146 plus 121? It's 267. 267 you're going to have as positive cash flow on a regular basis. That makes sense, yes or no? Yes. So see how we're budgeting conservatively? Now, Russell, we were just talking about interest rates and variable rates, how the variable rates are paying off a lot more quickly and all those kind of things. But you came up with a number yesterday. You were telling me that, you know what, values have been kind of in Edmonton. They're just kind of chunking along, right? If anything, they've gone down in some of the townhouses. But you told me that you didn't care. What was the number? You did. Russell has a decent portfolio, and he did the analysis of how much his tenants paid down his mortgage throughout this for 1 year. What was that number, Russ?
It was last year was $132,000.
$130,000, and the market did, right? Pretty
that's
well.
The technical term, yes. Yeah.
Yeah. $131,000. So whether you have 50 properties or 5 properties, you still want to understand that that is a real life cash that eventually will show up in your life. It's like a forced savings paid for by your excellent. Excellent. See how it's not get rich quick? It's just like build that nice, solid foundation. So as we go through, we're at the 30-year amortization, first finance. So now you have to come up with your down payment. So if you got 45 grand in your pocket, you're ready to go, correct? Yes or no? Yeah. Wrong. Because so many beginners. Did you say that, Christine? Veteran? The truth is, you have closing costs, and unfortunately, people forget these closing costs. So please work your way through all the closing costs, inspection, and appraisal. Every property, you need to have an inspection. And if you're not, if it's a condo, you also need to have an inspection on the condo documents, which is going to cost you a couple $100. So see where it says other? Write in condo document review. An appraisal, increasingly more banks are going back to the appraisal because of all the stuff that's going on their, what's that system that they use? It's woman's name, what was it? What's it? Emily, that's it, yeah. So, real property report, you're going to hear about that later from our Barry McGuire. But you need to have one in order to close, so you might as well put it on the owner to provide it, and if the owner's not going to, you're going to have to pay for one. And mortgage broker's fees, because it's a single-family home, so there shouldn't be any. Legal cost to close is anywhere from $895 to $1,695 for the exact same document. Now, the one I want to focus on right now is the Staying Power Fund. Staying Power Fund is the sleep at night fund. It's the fund that you take about 1 month's net rent, sometimes 2 months' net rent, and you put it in a bank account, and you do not touch it. You do not touch it until the hot water tank blows or one of those instances. By the way, hot water tanks are all wired together around the world, and they know your portfolio, and they phone each other, okay, ready, set, boom, 1, 2, 3, we'll all go at once. It's the most bizarre thing, so get used to it. But if you have $1,085 sitting over on the sidelines, do not touch it for a down payment. Do not touch it because it's if you got 100 properties, you got $100,000 sitting on the sidelines. That's craziness. But so if you got $1,000 of sleep at night fund waiting so that when something happens, i.e. a vacancy or something breaks, you've got the money. The property manager phones you, you go, fix it. Not like, oh crap, my visas are all maxed. I'm in Mexico. How am I ever going to get the money to pay for it? This is that sleep at night fund. 1 month, if not 2 months, especially at the beginning, 2 months would be really nice. If you could factor that into your closing costs, $2,000 for renovations, title insurance, if you're going to do that, add $300 on that. And of course, we'll talk about title insurance a little bit later on in the day. So now your closing costs about $5,000. So it's going to cost you about $49,000 to buy this property. $49,000 for $121 a month positive cash flow in a market where pressures are going up is a winner. Okay? Understand that. If the pressures are that it's flat or going down, it's okay. So is it taking you closer? If it's negative cash flow, it's taking you farther away from your personal beliefs. If it's positive cash flow, it's taking you closer to that option, work being an option. All right. This one here is a white one. It's a little bit later on. You don't see it there. The next one's a purple one in your book. But a white one, that's yours to use, okay? Don't write any notes or anything on that. That's yours to photocopy so you can use for your personal use. But I want to ask you one question. This one, how low can you go? So we talked a lot about license. We talked an awful lot about down payment, and we could use our line of credit. So why don't we factor that in to see how it'll work? In this case, we're going to use the secured line of credit on our home or our joint venture partner's home or something to pay that down payment. How much was the down payment? I just told you. 40-something. Okay. Great. Thank you for paying attention. How much can you reduce your out-of-pocket? What if you got that down to five or eight grand of out-of-pocket and then the rest came off of a line of credit. So what you need to do is change up your financing a little bit. So back on the top of that page, there's a purple one now that will walk you through this example. The line of credit, we're going to use $40,000. You know, we could use $48,000. We could do the whole thing. There's no reason why it's 40, but we use $40,000. It's 4.5%, which is a little bit expensive right now. But it's interest only because it's a secured line of credit. You only have to pay interest. There's no incentive to pay it off, all right? So you've taken that $40,000 and you've used that as most of your down payment. But what that does, of course, is it screws up your cash flow. You have to pay out of your net rent, this extra $150 a month. So that adds up here. Now your net cash flow is minus $28.53. So we're at $114, right? And we went to minus $28. No, $104, whatever the math is, doesn't matter. We're now at minus $28.53. Are we really? Yes or no? No, because remember, this is a budget. This is thinking smart like a business owner. So we've got the vacancy allowance, we have the repairs and maintenance, and we have a sleep at night fund that's sitting on the sidelines waiting for the repairs and maintenance. So even if the repairs come, you're probably not going to have to pay that budget out. So I have double protected the sleeping ability of all of you by doing it this way. This is exactly how Connie and I do it. It's exactly how Russell does it. It's exactly how Patrick does it. You build up this whole portfolio properly so that it doesn't eat your lunch. Now, sometimes bad things will sneak through, but generally, this reduces the risk dramatically. So now we're at negative cash flow of $1,027 over that 3 years. But you're in a market that is going pressurized upwards, right, for both revenue and values. So now, about year one, we're going to raise our rents. And in year two, we may or may not be able to, but year three, we'll probably raise our rents. So this will quickly disappear only if we're buying in a market that has these six things in a row, all lined up, geographically specialized, good, strong, in migration. This I would buy all day long, using a line of credit all day long, building my portfolio, because I know that I can add back the 60, can you flip back one page there? What is it, the R&M was 80, was it? Repairs and maintenance? 81, thank you, Christine. And what was the vacancy allowance? 65, so $140. So I'm actually still going to positive cash flow in this, about $100. So that's pretty good. In a market that's pressurized upwards. In an average crappy market, I wouldn't do this deal. It's too leveraged. So you're actually coming out of pocket with $3,900 for the down payment, and you could also, you know, of course, do the whole line of credit, but your closing costs still factor in $8,830 to get into that property. Winner, winner, chicken dinner. I have no idea where that's from, but it seems to be everyone's using it. So $8,830. This is how you decide. But if you did all of that math, all of that painful math on all of the properties down here without doing the cash flow zone and getting rid of them, you would constantly, and many of you love this, sit downstairs and hide away on the computer. Fourth tip to remember is don't turn this into a spreadsheet, because what happens is you can screw with it. And Ray's going to show that with you very, very quickly. What happens, you can talk yourself into properties, even though the system tells you not to. So for every property that you're going to buy, this has to be done. And it has to be accurate and has to be budgeted. And when you do that, if it comes out like it's going to fit, like this one here would fit for my portfolio, I would move it to step 7, which obviously comes after 6 and comes later on in the day, but I would move that to step 7 and I would put it and negotiate the deal and I would work my way through the process. If it comes out, even if it was 9% on the cash flow zone and it came out that it was actually going to be negative, throw it away. If it's going to be something, a monster that just kind of continually eats your lunch, you don't want anything to do with that. Well, multifamily, some of you are like me, you like to buy multifamily properties. Raise your hand. A little bit of a different game. You know, we've, we did a whole weekend on multifamily, but I've given you the multifamily quick analyzer in there, because different it asks for different things, and there's different things on closing costs, etc. So that you use that one if you're going to buy a sixplex or larger. All right, sixplex or larger. So multifamily. Just a quick side note, because I have 2 minutes. That's great. Multifamily is very interesting right now, because with multifamily, sixplexes or higher, the banks are actually lining up to write you the check. They want to lend to multifamily properties right now. Single family properties for investment, they've tightened up, as we have all witnessed and all heard in the media, etc. But over here, you can get full-on CMHC. You can get, two-thirds of my properties on the multifamily are CMHC insured, because it's worth it if I'm going to hold it for more than 5 years. The interest rate drops tremendously. I thought an interest rate the other day for 5-year locked in a multifamily for 3.1. Yes, was my negotiations. That's how I negotiated on that one. Yes, I will take that, sir. Thank you. But with multifamily, it's easier to get financing, and we're not going to talk much about financing today. So one other thing is, if the banks are saying no to you on single family, that's not saying no to you in investment world. Because if you move there from single family over to sixplex or higher, you probably get a yes. Because for some of you, this is a good story. In single family, they look at you and then the property. In multifamily, look at the property and a little bit of you. So if you don't look so pretty on paper, obviously, if you don't look so pretty on paper, then move to multifamily and attempt that, because that's where you can be. And that's where all the money's pouring into right now, because of the ease of financing.